Welcome to the Change Management Institute's podcast mini-series, where I'll be focusing on a few key terminologies that are used in change management. My name is Pubana Latanaspapathy, a member of the Change Management Institute myself. I work as a senior lecturer at Pepukenga, where I teach change management at the tertiary level. Change management is a vast subject, and there are many terminologies that are used interchangeably in the field. The purpose of this podcast is to help demystify some of the commonly used terms found in the literature so that they may be understood more accurately and used more appropriately in the documentation and practice. My guest today is Shan Rinaldi, who is the Vice President of the Change Management Institute. She's also the Non-Executive Director at Graduate of the Australian Institute of Company Directors and the Executive Designer at Pinplex. In this episode, Shan and I will be discussing five key terminologies that are commonly found in the change management literature, such as approach, strategy, theory, model, and framework. They are commonly used words that are also used interchangeably in the change management field. I'm thankful that she's able to dedicate her time to share her thoughts about how these words are used in her experience. Shan, welcome to the first episode of this mini-series. It's great to have you join me today to discuss the subtle differences between these words. For the benefit of my listeners, would you care to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about where you're from and what you do?
For sure. Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to join you on today. And for the first one, it's exciting to see it kick off. For those who don't know me, my name is Shan Rinaldi. As I was delightfully introduced, I sit on the board of the Change Management Institute. I started getting involved with change management as a profession fairly early on in my career. I was pretty fortunate. I was working in the Australian Public Service, so in a government setting, and was working on big IT projects and mostly in the operations and policy spaces. And we wanted people to be able to pick up and use the products that we were putting in place and the systems that we were putting in place. But oftentimes there was this human element and, regardless of how good of our processes and our, standard operating procedures and everything were, people still found it challenging and they didn't really necessarily want to be involved in it. And that started my interest in, well, how do we help support people in that? And I went through journeys of kind of learning and development and training and thinking, surely if we just give people the tools, then they'll be happy to use it. And weirdly, that didn't work out as well as I thought it would. And I sort of realized there was a whole bunch of human psychology and things that go along with change. And then discovered there was a whole profession called change management. And I thought, wow, I found my people. So that's how I got involved. And how I continue to work in the industry today.
That's great. Thanks for that. Nice to know that the human element is kept on the forefront, because that's always important with change initiatives, isn't it? Okay, so before I introduce the terms and get to the questions, I'd like to ask you another question, which is about whether you have experienced the interchangeable use of these words yourself in any engagement that you might have had, where people might have misunderstood the words or approached a piece of work differently to what you might have expected and how it was managed or handled at the time. This would help to lead into the questions later, perhaps set the scene and put things into perspective in relation to the purpose of this episode.
I was really excited about the topic of this because really understanding language and the importance of language is so important when we're actually trying to get people on board with a process or with a change. One of the things that I do get quite passionate about is making sure that we're making our language really understandable. Because it can be really powerful. And I mentioned before, I do a lot of stuff in IT change. And oftentimes when we're talking to people, we'll say, you know, that someone will say, oh, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Or, you know, they'll be quite negative. And there's a lot of negative self-talk about I'm not very good at this. I'm not very IT savvy and things like that. And then that's kind of perpetrated, but often by people well-meaning, but not realizing that they're coming up and using language such as, you know, oh, I know what you've done wrong there, or this is what you're doing wrong. And it's like, no, you're not as a human doing anything wrong if the system is not as easily navigated or understood. That's not the human's problem. That's a design issue. In terms of the, like, using different languages. I mentioned before, I work in the Australian Public Service. Australian Public Service love an acronym. And there's even jokes about TLAs, which is three-letter acronyms, which is what they are very famous for. But also what one acronym means in one department might be completely different in another department, right? So, you know, I always take the process of, particularly when I've got a new client, is asking the stupid question. I'll come out from my first meetings with a client and I'll have like a page full of acronyms or names or titles of things, basically it's with a little explanation if I manage to grab one, or, you know, a question mark if I need to follow through and understand a little bit more about what's what they actually mean. The other thing I think that's important is be really straight up and confident in confirming that your understanding of what people are saying is the correct one. So if someone's talking about an approach, to foreshadow your words, if someone's talking about an approach and you think, geez, is this an approach or is this a strategy? Or, you know, they're talking about a full strategy and that's not necessarily a word that you would use, you know, question it gently. And it doesn't have to be a confrontational thing. It could be like, oh, wow, can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that? Or what would this look like in practice? So one of the things that we do use a lot of in my work is if we pointed a camera at that, what would that look like? So, and what we mean by that is we're looking for a behavior that we're looking for a behavior, not a thing. So, you're saying, you know, I want people to be more happy in their world. You could go, okay, well, if we pointed a finger, pointed a camera at that, what would that look like? So we're trying to get things that we can measure, that we can manage, that kind of thing. So, yeah, really being clear about it, taking the time to ask those questions and really make sure that you understand what people mean by these terms, because they are used interchangeably and people will take them to mean different things as well.
Well, nice to know that, you know, I'm not the only one experiencing this, but, you know, it's out there and it's being noticed. I like your point about the importance of language and the fact that to keep the point about people of different cultures possibly taking different meanings, and so making sure that everyone understands the terms as this should be, you know. That's great. That's good to know. Okay, so let's move on to the terms. The first two words to start with. So let me briefly introduce the terms and then clarify what I mean. These are based on the literature, and we will look at the first two words, that is approach and strategy. By the word approach, we are referring to the way we get closer to addressing a situation or problem where some kind of change may be necessary or required. By the word strategy, we are referring to a long-term roadmap of some kind to help achieve a goal. So which approach have you found to be most successful to move forward with your desired change?
That's such a great question. The way I take these two terms, and I think it broadly aligns to your definition as well, or the kind of more academic kind of definition, is like my strategy is the big picture. So that's kind of my North Star. That's what we're heading towards. And then my approach is more my kind of tactical level, like how am I going to reach that strategy? So it's kind of like a step down into the actual practicality of it. I had a teacher explain once that if you look at it like a battlefield, a strategy is your war. your approach might be your battle, and then your tactics are your like your individual like warfare kind of thing. I was like, oh, okay, that's one way to look at it. But I kind of take the point in terms of strategy is kind of where you want to end up, right? We want to do this. And I think a strategy needs to be something that people can put every behavior they have through that strategic lens. And by that, I mean, I once worked with a not-for-profit and their aim was to try and be financially, you know, sustainable, right? And so when we're going through their three-year plan, off the back of that strategy was agreed. And then off the back of that plan, we started looking at activities that they could be doing. And every activity we kind of picked up and we looked through that lens and said, okay, well, if we spend our time and energy doing this thing, how is that activity going to get us to our strategic objective? So if it wasn't going to make us financially sustainable, we really needed to question whether we needed to do it, whether it met another goal that we had in mind, or if it was just kind of fluff. But we went, okay, this is a nice to have, but we're not going to spend our time and effort on it because it doesn't sit with our core activities or our core aim for the organization, and it's not hitting our kind of midterm strategic goals. So that's another way I like to look at strategy. So, you know, are we moving? Is what I'm doing today moving me towards my end goal? I also see strategy as being a little bit further into the future. So, you know, a strategy could be 12 months to 3 years kind of thing. An approach can be a lot more flexible, and it's generally a shorter period of time. So, and I kind of feel it's a way of approaching, you know, a group of people and saying, okay, well, if we're meant to make this change to them, we're going to look at the whole, we're going to break them down into, you know, sensible groups. And I tend to move into the behavioral sciences approaches, which is using things like rather than just straight demographics. So instead of going all of our frontline workers, we're going to move through this process. We tend to look at it more along the line of psychographics and understanding that within the frontline worker cohort, you might have 5 or 6 different types of people, and you can more homogeneously, group them up and work with them with a different approach that could be some of our other people. So a classic is your early adopters versus your laggards for an IT perspective or using new technology. You don't want to approach them in the same way because they need different things. So that's, to my mind, the biggest difference between an approach and a strategy. So strategic is really forward-facing and is that aim in the future. And then your approach is more like, you know, well, how are you going to achieve that? That more tactical, nuts and bolts level.
Yeah. I think the questions that you mentioned earlier about helping people understand about moving towards a strategy is an easy one to understand that people can relate to. Yeah, that's good. Thanks for that. Which strategy have you found to be most effective in shaping your practice?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think in terms of strategy, so strategy is something particular on the board we've got to really think about, and it's about like really using things as a North Star. We talk about North Stars a lot, and the reason why we talk about North Stars, you can call it the light on the hill, you can call it whatever you need to call it, but it's, you're not there yet. You need to get there. So there is a framework called a theory of change, which I absolutely love. So a theory of change, you kind of work backwards on it. So you start with where you want to end up, and that's kind of on your right-hand side of the page. And then on the left-hand side of the page, you talk about where you are now. And then in the middle, you kind of have all of these like sections which explain all of the things that have to change to enable you to get to where you want to go. And sometimes along the top, we like to put things like, I would like to, you know, update my database to access more of my customers more helpfully or whatever, so I can, you know, expand my brand, for instance. So it's kind of this logical sequence. It's not dissimilar to a Harvard approach of jobs to be done. Instead of writing down business requirements for a new system or whatever, you look at jobs to be done. So I want to be able to do something so I can do something else, and then I can achieve whatever. So that's from a strategic point of view. I like to kind of start with the end in mind and then kind of retrospectively think about, well, what's holding us back right now, and what do we need to change along the way? So it's a little bit of that design element as well. And that kind of gives you a really cool frame in which to work and to focus your time and efforts.
Yeah, I agree with it, starting with the end in mind, because that kind of helps to put the vision together. And people can see that right up front, which helps them guide them forward. So moving on, so we will move to the next set of words, which is about theory, model, and framework. Again, these are commonly used terms as well in the change management literature. And so let me explain the words as we see it, and then we'll get into the questions. So by the word theory, we are referring to a body of knowledge that explains a phenomenon that is broad but worthy of being tested and formalized. By the word model, we are referring to a particular aspect of a given theory where it serves as a lens into the real world, and it can be used as an example. And lastly, the word framework, we're referring to a basic structural frame that consists of independent parts that make up the whole overall structure, where it provides a visualization of the relationships between the parts. The parts can be ideas, concepts, or even theories that come with your own body of knowledge. When put together, it presents the whole overall structure. So with regards to the theory, what other theory or theories do you regularly incorporate in your own practice and why?
Yeah, thank you. So I think really that theory of change in terms of something that, and there's something that jumps out at me in your definition as well, which is that concept of it's worthy of being tested. So it's not this pie in the sky, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, turn every single one of my employees into a millionaire, or, you know, I'm going to be across 17 different countries within the next 6 months or something. Like, it is something feasible. It's something, you know, that's quite possible. And I think working off of like things like a theory of change and things like that can be really great. I mean, it's an approach to thinking about a strategy, and it's a different way of looking at it and going, yeah, okay, this is how we're going to set this up. And I suppose to a certain extent, it is a model, because we're going to break down all of the things that we envisage with this like end success state and go, these are the key bits that we need to change to make that happen. And so from that perspective, it's like, that's the modeling that we're going to look at. That's how we're going to say, okay, we're going to pick this up and we're going to do this. For our framework, I like to, probably one of the most ones that I use like very, very regularly is ADCAR. So, you know, we're all change practitioners should be very, very familiar with this. I quite like ADCAR. I know it's got its detractors, but in terms of a relatively simple framework that people can see and follow, I quite like it. It's got at its heart, it shows that changing is a journey, and you've got to have an awareness and a desire, and you've got to work through all of these steps and things like that. Now, I think where probably some detractors have some truth in it is that when people try and take it as cut and dry and that, and what we've got to remember is that we're dealing with humans. And then I usually, at some point in any discussion, I managed to pull out this framework that I was taught in university back when I was there. And they talk about the difference between complicated and complex. A bicycle is complicated because you can take a bicycle apart, put it back together, and it functions as a bicycle again. A toad is complex because if you take it apart and put it back together, it will not function as a toad anymore. I mean, you can take little bits and bits off it, but ultimately it's not going to be because it's organic. And as soon as you bring organic in, it becomes a complex base. So with humans, we're dealing with toads. We're dealing with complex organic creatures. And when we put an action in place today, we can't confidently know that that same action will result in the same outcome the next day because there's so many factors at play here, right? So ADCAR for an overarching framework works, but again, it's kind of like your strategy and your approach, right? If I'm going to build desire, that is my strategy. That's what I want to end up with. But my approach might be really different depending on who I'm speaking to. And I think understanding that kind of complexity is really important. I often talk to some of the graduates of my work and, you know, my I don't like calling them more junior staff, like my less life experience staff members. I often talk to them about, you know, you can look at something on a flat piece of paper and it's just, you know, it's written down. But if you kind of tilt it slightly, then it becomes this whole, you know, 3D piece and there's a whole bunch of richness behind it. And I kind of feel like with ADCAR, if you look at it just prima facie, it is just straight up and down on the piece of paper. But if you just nudge it slightly, you get to see that there's a whole bunch of rich tapestry behind it that you need to engage with as well. So it's not following the bouncing ball, but there's a lot in it. But as a framework that can give you a good indication of where to start and where to go, it's pretty solid.
Well, nice to know that. Do you treat ADCAR more like a framework? Just coming back to the model, which model resonates most with the stakeholders you support and why?
So I think in terms of a model, I lean in a lot to behavioral psychology. So So we look a lot at how humans work, how humans interact. And I mentioned before, we want to point a camera at a behavior, right? Like if we want someone to do something, we can't tell people how they should feel, but we can potentially impact on their behavior, which could then lead on to some other things. The other thing that I do like to think about is looking at who I'm working with. And that could be, as I say, like a cohort or a cohort within a cohort. So if we're looking at frontline workers, middle managers, the classic one within change management. So if I'm looking at a middle manager, I'll look at the types of middle managers that I'm trying to work and I'm trying to influence. The classic WIFM, the what's in it for me, that's always a good one. But I do think that we have to be really cautious sometimes that we're not dipping into toxic positivity. So oftentimes in change, we talk about, oh, look at all of the benefits and this is going to be a great benefit for everyone. Yeah, benefits are definitely a selling point, but I do feel like sometimes people can feel like it's being rammed down their throat, like this is going to be amazing and it's going to be so good. And also, I think we need to be honest with ourselves. Some of these changes aren't necessarily a great outcome for the people on the coalface or in the trenches with people. It's actually harder. Or their life is made, you know, they've now got a system that they've got to learn or something like that. So whilst there might be bottom line benefits or there might be other benefits throughout, you know, in the greater good world, individually, they may not see those benefits, or they may not see them immediately, which makes it hard for them to engage with. So when we are looking at things, I love to like look into nudge behaviors. So that, I don't know if you've ever read Nudge, but very, very great book about how do we actually kind of shift those behaviors or nudge them into what we need them to do. So things like anchoring a behavior to another behavior. So if I want someone to tell me how their week's been, I might attach it to their timesheet And then it's just like a little smiley face button or something within their timesheet that they're already doing. So they're already doing a behavior. We've already built in that habit. How are we going to kind of anchor another behavior onto that habit so it's easy for them to do? Putting things out. We've used things like color schemes before within printing things and stuff to be like, oh, we're talking about this here. So that's a bit of a prompt for people to think about, oh, yeah, this ties to that new system or whatever they've been talking about. So it's about communicating with people where they are, and it's about communicating or helping people build the new behavior into their current behaviors, rather than just autocratically saying you have to do this, or worse, just bombarding people with emails all the time saying this change is happening, because people don't necessarily care until it matters and affects them.
Yeah, that's right. Great tip about that book that you mentioned. I must check it out. Sounds like it provides good tips for helping people manage change themselves. And it's interesting that you mentioned about giving them another bit of behavior to anchor or to nudge themselves forward, which is helpful. So thanks for that. And I think you've got to use tactics to sort of help along, isn't it? Help people along the journey and to help them adjust their own behavior, because they may not even realize that it's happening. So that's interesting points there. Now, just you mentioned about ADKA before being a framework. Do you see that as a theoretical or a conceptual framework? These theoretical and conceptual frameworks are popular, but is it true then that the ADKA framework is the most valuable and popular one that you see, or as being the most effective in your practice?
My personal view, I'm actually quite framework agnostic. So I work in consulting. I work in a strategy design, strategic design firm. So we do a lot of design work. We do a lot of work within human-centered design. So we were one of the first organizations to bring that to kind of the Australian government field back in 20-odd years ago with tax and thinking about ways that we can approach getting people to pay their tax. And what they found was in the regulatory space, and they found this again and again, is most people want to do the right thing. So if you kind of understand people, that's the first thing. The second thing is that people just want to do things as easy as possible. So if you can kind of flip it and go, well, instead of making it really difficult for people to do, rather than making it super difficult for people to do something because we want to make sure all of our regulatory boxes are ticked, we're going to assume that kind of 80% of people want to do the right thing, and we're going to make it really, 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 really easy for them to do it. So for the majority of people, and if anyone of our Australian listeners have done tax in the last kind of 5 years, we've made it pretty simple to be able to use the systems and things like that. Most of the stuff is submitted to the government. The government collates it all for you, and then you kind of just go, yeah, I'm happy with that. You can get it done in about 10 minutes. But we do recognise that from that remainder percentage, that 20%, there's some people who want to do the wrong thing, and it's people who might inadvertently not realize that they're doing the wrong thing. And so we kind of want to capture them and say, hey, did you really mean to do this? And they go, oh, whoops, no, sorry, I didn't. And then they can go on the merry way. And then you probably got about 10% who are like, no, I'm gonna try this. And of that 10%, probably around 80% are just being cheeky. They're going to see what they can get away with. But then there's that remainder too, and they are the people who are actively trying to do something terrible. They are trying to thwart a system. And what we used to do was build systems for that 2% to try and detract, to try and make it really difficult for them to do it. But what we made it, what happened was we just made it really hard for the 98%, which means that the people who wanted to do it, it was just too hard, or the barriers were too high, so they just didn't. And so that's an example of human-centered design, right? So what I like to think about, though, is human-centered implementation. And so oftentimes when we're designing systems or we're designing changes or we're looking at our theory of change and we say, hey, we want to get here, and we look at all the things that need to change to get us to this point, oftentimes we'll come up with some brilliant artifacts, things like user journeys and, you know, customer experience maps and things like that. And then we get to the implementation side and we kind of ditch it all. And I always think, well, why? Because, you know, when we've got a user journey or we've got a persona, we've actually outlined the current state. So we often outline the future and the current state. So let's map that. Let's figure out what the delta is. And then we can actually pick off bits to work with those people individually to say, hey, you know, you usually do it this way. We're going to do it this way. How do we help make that as easy transition for you as possible? So I think part of, in terms of, as I said before, like with AGCAR, I think it's a useful framework because it tells you all of the stages that people kind of need to go for an effective change. But the way to which you do that, you know, I don't think it should be a one size fits all. And that's why I kind of come back to this this model or framework agnostic position that I'm in. So if you wanted to pick up, the Cotter's Eight Steps or Lewin's kind of freeze, refreeze, like do that. That's fine. But I suppose the biggest crux that I think people need to understand that it is a journey and that people need to kind of go through. And you can see that in all manner of pieces of your life. If you've ever tried to change anything within your life, you've got to recognize that it starts somewhere and then you've got to transition through.
Great. Thanks for that. I'm seeing a general theme come through, actually, when we are responding to all the questions, that people matter. And they need to be in the center of the change initiative, the integral to the process. And it's nice to know that you are involved with human-centered design and implementation, because at the end of the day, they need to be happy with the change, the goal that they are working towards, the vision. And so keeping it simple, aligning ourselves to their needs, and just making sure that we're meeting the needs all the way throughout the journey. Sounds like, you know, that sounds great, you know. That pretty much comes to the end of all the questions that I was planning to ask. It's been interesting to hear your thoughts and your experiences of these terms in practice. And it's nice to know that there is interchangeability of these words, and you need to pause when you detect it and ask the question to verify that you're on the same page with them, moving forward, so that you don't discover that they had a different understanding or expectation of change itself. So thank you so much for your time. I learned a few things, a few tips from you, which I'll take forward, and I will check out that book that you mentioned as well, Nudge. That sounds interesting. So thanks again for your time and your thoughts and for sharing your experiences.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really great. And yeah, absolutely, you nailed it. I think it's, you know, words are words. Always check in and make sure, you know, communication only works if both parties understand everything. So yeah.
And most of all, thank you for your willingness to participate in this first mini series to share your views, Sian. So thank you so much for your time, and all the best with all the work that you do.
Lovely. Thank you so much.